Hey, Bobby Manning here. Welcome to Dome Theory 96. We got Kobe Price here today to talk about the early NBA season. The league is underway about a week in. We've seen the Celtics vault up among some of the best teams early on, some of the more dynamic, fun teams to watch so far. Up and down style, ton of off-ball activity. It's mesmerizing what they've become on offense. The willingness they're showing to screen and run the floor and throw quick outlets, make those quick decisions and reads, getting downhill. I even see Jaylen Brown in practice trying to screen and roll and do those off-ball things that are going to open up his game as a facilitator. Problem is, that defense isn't great. Big collapse on Monday against the Bulls, who look good. I love the Hawks so far. I think they got another good victory last night as I record this. They're good teams up and down the East. The Cavaliers are impressive. They're coming into Boston on Friday and early next week. They're hosting the Celtics, so a little bit of a home and home around them. The Wizards are off to a good start again, though that was smoke and mirrors last year. We'll see if Kristaps Porzingis can stay healthy. And in the West, you got your Lakers. You got your Kings, some real disappointing teams there at the bottom, some surprises early at the top, Portland. I don't know what's going on with the Clippers. I guess Kawhi's knee's hurting. They're 29th in offense. I think that's an early season thing. I still believe in them. Dallas, I believe in them. You got Luka throwing to Christian Wood on the floor, and the Suns proven to be more involved than people potentially thought there. I did see them as a fall-off candidate. I think the bigger fall-off candidate that we didn't talk about too much was the Heat. And those Nets. You know how I feel about those Nets. They're exactly where I thought they'd be so far. Steve Nash getting ejected. Ben Simmons falling out of games, looking not ready to come back. This dysfunction there early, it feels like, and more so an apathy toward the situation. Even saw them coming out of the tunnel on opening night, and no one pumping their arms or getting excited for this season, anything like that. But I want to talk about football. That debacle on Monday night is as bad as it gets, and I'm still baffled by this Mac Jones, Bailey Zappi conversation. In my mind, Mac goes down, looked like season's over. He had this great effort against Baltimore, falls short, they had made progress, Mac's playing poorly, and on top of it all, he gets knocked out of the game. So the backdrop of this is him reportedly not being thrilled about the coaching early on. You do have this Matt Patricia, Joe Judge thing that dominated training camp. I don't think anyone knows why they're the offensive coordinators on this team. And certainly Mac didn't seem to either. And it all led to a pretty tense and poor offensive showing early in the season. There just wasn't much oomph to this offense. So you didn't see an upside for this team. You didn't even see them being capable of putting down bad teams the way they were a year ago. But Bailey Zappi comes in, revert to some of the tendencies of last year, more play action, more dynamic run pass setups. And they keep it simple for him, and he thrives. They destroy the Lions, they destroy the Browns. So at that point, Mac had seemingly his whole season threatened when whoever it was on that defensive line of Baltimore fell on his leg. Could have been a broken leg, but escapes with a high ankle sprain, a severe injury. Everyone's saying it's worse than a break. 4 weeks at least, maybe 6 weeks. All of a sudden, a week later, you're hearing the whispers that, oh, maybe Mac's ready to go. 2 weeks in, oh, he could potentially go this week. And the Patriots are doing their classic diversions and smoke screens, trying to gain some advantage there. And he doesn't play against Detroit, doesn't play against Cleveland. He's in Cleveland, though. And those whispers are getting louder. Oh, maybe Mac should be playing. I think he's closer than people think. Oh, he could lose his job if he waits another week. He's got to get back out there the way Zappi's playing. All of a sudden, there was this pressure put on him. I don't know how much by the team, certainly by the fans, certainly by voices in the media. Just pushing him to get back quick. All of a sudden, Chicago comes around, I think it's still incomprehensible that they throw him in there. Not much practice the week before. Zappe looking solid. Win streak rolling. Take one more week. Take 2 more weeks. There's no rush. That's never what the Patriots did. Bill wouldn't answer questions about who the starter is. Enters that game with 2 quarterbacks. Starting with Mac. Goes poorly, of course. They set themselves back. They play from behind. Mac throws a bad interception and gets pulled. And all of a sudden, the crowd's chanting for Zappe. Zappe goes on this nice run. Long touchdown pass to Myers. And they looked like a moment, sliver of hope. And that's not all you should have against a really bad Chicago team. But that is all they had that night. And they lose in an embarrassing fashion. A controversy after the game. Myers is talking about Mac getting done wrong. And you have Mac and Zappe at the podium trying to explain Bill's decision. Bill, of course, not taking questions on it. It's a mess. And so Mac's back taking the first practice reps. But you wonder what kind of damage is done here at this point between the coordinators, between this unnecessary controversy, and the rush to get Mac back that seemingly has him even more in a position of pressure to withhold Zappe. Who was ultimately the better quarterback last week. But Mac, I think, still has the more potential. This year was all about establishing his potential, and they have set him back so far. And now, because of that Chicago loss, you might not even have a playoff hope, even with 3 quote-unquote easy games up next for this team. So I haven't been thrilled with the Bill experience post-Brady. That was a real low on Monday, and you hope Mac Jones' era isn't over because of poor handling of an injury and a backup quarterback situation that should have been a blessing for this team. Kept them alive, kept them interesting, gave us a football season. We still have one here, but it's certainly undermined now by what is potentially brewing here. So I didn't love that. Kanye, I'm not going to spend too long on him. You know, you've seen it by now. Anti-Semitic language. I think people have a point with the anti-black language that he has used, though I don't get undermining the anti-Semitism to raise that point. We could have raised that point, any one of us, earlier, certainly. I mean, I certainly saw the writing on the wall with Kanye quite a while ago. And beyond the anti-Semitic comments, disparaging George Floyd, you had him weirdly harassing his ex-wife and her new boyfriend at the time, Pete Davidson. I had made this list of like 100 Kanye a-hole moments at this point. That's what it's all about. Just an a-hole. Never felt consequences for anything he's done. He's hurt a lot of people over the years at this point. And it was all yes men around him, including Jaylen Brown and collaborators, management, companies. And they all abandoned him at this point. And call it what you want, cancel culture, blah, 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 blah. I think that's what it's going to take for him to finally feel some heat, though. Apparently not. He's back on Instagram posting, making fun of this whole situation. So do people just wait for time to pass and associate with him again for money? Or do they really hold his feet to the fire this time? I'm sensing the latter, but again, I've been off this guy for a minute. And it's too bad. I know we all looked up to him. I know we love the music. I know we love some of the artists that he gave platforms to, particularly my favorite all the time, Kid Cudi. But you even see Cudi now at this point saying we can never be friends again. And Jalen talking about forgiveness and support and all that. And I think that has been a theme around Kanye all this time. And there's certainly some mental illness at play. But I don't think that's what this was about. I think he really has taken on some misguided beliefs and is going to have to step away from those, I think, to exist at the level he did. And we might never see it again. 20 years. I think Kanye finally took his fatal fall. We are brought to you here by Athletic Greens at Dome Theory. I use it literally every day. Wanting better gut health, more energy, optimized immune system. That's a big one. I don't want to be sick. And you can get vitamins, minerals, probiotics, adaptogens, and other places, but all 75 of those whole food sourced ingredients are in AG1, one scoop each morning in your water. Costs less than $3 a day. 7,000 five-star reviews recommended by pro athletes and many more. Go check out those reviews. People love this stuff. Make it easy. Athletic Greens is going to give you a free one-year supply of immune-supporting vitamin D and five free travel packs with your first purchase. All you have to do is visit athleticgreens.com/garden. That's athleticgreens.com/garden to take ownership of your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutritional insurance. I got this great bottle here from them, too. I think that comes included with that monthly package. So go check that out. See if it's for you. And calm.com/garden. When you think of self-care, what comes to mind for me? It's sleep. Sleep is so important. Nap during the day, getting those full 8 hours, so important. And getting stuff you need to do during the day depends on that. So I use the sleep sounds on Calm. Some people midday need a break, need to reduce stress and anxiety. That's what the Calm of the Day is for. Talk you through a meditation in the morning to get you prepared for a day. There's whatever you need, there's something for you on Calm. And calm.com/garden is going to get you 40% off a premium subscription. 100 million people around the world use Calm to take care of their minds. Stress less, sleep more, live a happier, healthy life. There's yoga, there's meditations, as I said, bedtime stories even. And for listeners of Don't Dairy and the Garden Report, you are going to get 40% off with calm.com/garden. And big sponsor here, love them. Always get my sports information at betonline.ag. World Series starts tomorrow as I record this. The Astros are favored. I'm going to go with the Phillies. I sounded the alarm when the playoffs began. Look out for the Phillies. They can mash that ball, and they have all the way through San Diego in the NLCS and Atlanta in the first round, the defending champs. They're plus 165. That's a great number. You can go get that now at betonline.ag. Basketball every night. Still got your futures. Where are they at now on championships after the start? They love the Celtics still. Plus 575. Warriors plus 600. Clippers plus 700. Bucks 750. Nets, despite the slow start, plus 850. And some long shots, Suns, Nuggets, 76ers, Heat, Mavs, Grizzlies, Pelicans. So go bet on the long shot if you would like. On the NBA, NHL, MMA, golf, World Cup coming up. It's all there. Best time in the sports year to bet. Of course, football front and center. They are back. You got Thursday night football tonight as we read this. You have the Sunday slate of games coming up. And a bunch of futures as well. NFL draft. Anything you can think of. Even CFL. It's over there at betonline.ag. The number one source for all your betting needs. Odds, team matchup info, player news, game trends. Great website. All that information's there. Even if you're not betting, just go check out for your sports information. Live betting, free contests, live scores available if you are. Sports wagering information from NFL to tennis, boxing, and golf. And you can join for the 50% welcome bonus. You know the code, CLNS50, 50% back on your first deposit. 100 bucks gets you 50 free to play. BetOnline.ag, code CLNS50, BetOnline, where the game starts. Here's a guy I met down in Orlando while I was at the Miami and Orlando games. He's covered the Heat, he's covered the Magic over the last year, and he's had a front row seat to Paolo Banchero's start, which I'm excited to talk about. Bol Bol, the former Celtic, is thriving down there, and you have an 0-5 Magic team that's shown a lot more promise than that record would indicate, despite some early injuries. As I record this now, Cole Anthony is hurt with no timetable to return, which stinks, but opportunity for the others, including Banchero. Here is, from the Orlando Sentinel, Kobe Price on Dome Theory 96. Go get us, Stitcher, Spotify, iTunes, CLNS Media, and Celtics All Access on YouTube.
Hey, Bobby Manning here. Welcome to Dome Theory 96. We're back. Let some people get in the room here, and I'm excited to talk about some first impressions from the NBA season. And one of my big ones was going down to Orlando, Miami as well, catching both Florida teams. And I have some stuff to say about the Heat later in the show when we get into kind of stuff going on around the league through a couple games here. But I'm impressed by this 0-4 Magic team at this point. Even though they're losing games, they're competing. They fought hard with the Celtics, 126-120 on Saturday night there. That was a competitive game. And big reason that they've been able to fight is Paolo Banchero. So we're going to kick it off here with Kobe Price from the Orlando Sentinel. Great to meet you down there, Kobe, and great to talk to you here on the show.
Oh, yeah, no, it was great meeting you, too, and I appreciate you having me on. That was, the second out of back-to-back for both teams. That was a very – for a second out of a back-to-back early in the season, that was just a very energetic game in a way that you may not expect.
What an up-and-down play. Yeah, yeah. Some good shooting on both ends. And, listen, we finally got to have our first look at Banchero here. I know people have been watching him for years because he's been that that prodigy that – people hope could come in and physically compete at a high level here, but this wasn't the guy, at least immediately, that seemed like Orlando had their focus on. And maybe there was some like subterfuge there and they were playing some games, announcing and forecasting Jabari Smith being that guy. But when it all came out on draft night, it looked like they had nobody on their sights but Paolo Banchero, and the way that he's scoring so far and able to get his shot off, on a team that's been hit with injuries early on and doesn't have the best roster in the world, is really impressive. And it looks like they got the right guy here, at least early on.
Yeah, no, Paolo's been looking, you know, as good as advertised. He's not shooting outside of the first game where a lot of his makes are coming in transition, especially as a ball handler and also just filling the lanes. He hasn't shot particularly well. You know, I think I'm looking at it right now. I'm trying to do the quick math. 3 of 16 on threes. He hasn't, I think he's shooting like 40 something percent from the field. But the thing that he's really just shown is just the ability to get to the line like over and over again. Like 11 free throws against the Celtics. He had 11 against the Knicks, 8 in the loss to the Hawks, 7 in his first game against the Pistons. Like, he's just getting to the line over and over again. And for a teenager, don't see that a whole lot. That's a very, for a rookie period, but especially for such a young rookie, that's not something that should be taken for granted. That ability to just create easy points.
Yeah. And I'd imagine that like, there's a lot of history going on around him right now. I saw that the first three games with 20 plus points there. And did he have 20 again in the fourth one?
Yeah, he had 21 in the fourth one. So I think he was like the third number one pick, in the NBA's history to have 20 points in four consecutive games.
Yeah, and I'm looking at the free throw numbers here. 8.7 through the 23rd per game would be the most since 2000. So there's just historic numbers left and right with this guy. And I think so much of it is the physicality. Obviously, he's built well for the league right off the bat, which is rare. Usually these guys come in skinny, and you've seen in Orlando the amount of guys who have just come in with great length and great height and all that, but have to fill out body-wise has been nonstop over the last maybe decade there. But this guy comes in with serious physicality. But to me, it is that shot making. We'll see where the three-pointer goes. As you said there, it's not great from that position so far, but he makes tough shots. And so you look at the field goal percentage, 42. That's not great. You're going to want it to get higher than that. But on a team where you just need a guy to create some shots and you have this offense that's been at the bottom of the league for as long as anyone can remember now, just having a guy that can crack the defense open and make those fadeaways, turnarounds, tough looks in traffic at the rim, transition makes, like he can just get the ball in the net from anywhere. And that's what's most impressive about him to me early on.
Yeah, no, his ability, I mean, just to go get a bucket, just give him the ball up top, the elbow and the post, pinch, but whatever it is, he can get him from, you know, a variety of situations. He's a good driver. You know, he's a good driver. He's learning how to, I guess, protect or better understand how to protect the ball while driving so he doesn't get stripped or doesn't get the ball knocked away. But that's going to be for him, or especially for this specific Magic team, like what they need out of him. You know, they do have other guys who can score, but that ability to score in a variety of ways from all over the floor. And like I said, just be able to force contact, like just put defensive positions like we have nothing else to do except either eventually double team you or foul you or whatever it is, that's going to be such a it's going to be huge for the team because they don't have many other guys who can force that kind of attention or force that kind of issue in that way.
Yeah, and that'll help out everybody else. Now it's tough losing all the guards they have early on. Gary Harris is a guy who probably could have helped this team as a shooter, and Markelle Fultz. I'm still so bummed. Like, that, this looks like a great situation for him to be able to play a lot, develop, and get his feet under him, but he just keeps getting hurt. Jonathan Isaac's still not back, which is weird, but and then you have Jalen Suggs getting hurt pretty early on here too. So when you I saw like this injury chart last year, and you had all the different teams plotted out in terms of their games missed, and Orlando was like miles to the right in terms of games missed, just beyond anybody else. So not the worst thing in the world, I guess, to potentially have another bad season here, given the draft that's coming up, but you would like to have at least everybody in place to see what you have and make sure that everybody is supported by one another there. Although you got Wendell Carter looking good. But the guy I want to hit on as well here is Bol Bol. But first, what's it been like to just cover Banchero off the floor and talk to him, and just him as a personality around this team, since people probably really haven't gotten to hear from him much out of Orlando yet?
Yeah, no, Apollo's very, he seems very like mature beyond his years. He is 19. I think he turns 20 in November, something along those lines. Maybe I could be wrong. I'm going to check while we're talking. But, you know, he's a teenager. He's a rookie. But you can just tell when talking with him, the answers he gives back, that he just feels like a professional. He's come in November 12th, by the way. That's when he turns 20. He came in just feeling like a professional. He gives all the right answers. So he'll give you insightful answers at the same time. So personality wise, you know, he has the personality that you kind of want from a guy in his position. He's not overwhelmed by the attention. He's not, doesn't get caught up by it too much. He's pretty steady, at least being around him day to day. And that's kind of what you want, especially when, you know, you do have a team that has as many injuries as they've had. Luckily, you know, when we're talking about Markelle or Jalen or Gary, they're not long-term injuries, so you do expect to have them back. But even with that, kind of like the Magic, he's been weathering the storm. And, you know, for a rookie, for a 19-year-old, it's not always like that.
So let's get to the guy who was in Boston for a minute last year. I don't know if people even remember. He appeared at a practice in that boot, sat in some meetings, and then he was out of there. A lot of moving and shuffling for the Celtics.
I just imagine him literally, literally what you're saying, in a boot, walking in, signing some autographs, and just leaving and getting on the first plane to Orlando.
Yeah, that's pretty much what it was. And it's too bad, because I remember that was when the Celtics were going bad last year, and you were like, all right, maybe it's time to pile up on some of these other redraft guys, see if he can find some diamonds in the rough. And they kind of did that to some degree with a few guys who came in and out of there and stuck on, but Bol Bol, it wasn't going to happen for. They brought these two, him and PJ Dozier, in on a salary adjusting move, sending out Juancho Hernan Gomez, I think, to trying to remember all these moves off the top of my head. I think he ended up in San Antonio, and then there was a three-team trade with Denver. These two come into Boston. They're both hurt, and that's when you said, all right, the Celtics are just kind of moving on, preparing for next year. But they did make some moves to allow themselves some flexibility at the deadline, and that ended up being, some salary dumping in terms of Bol Bol and Dozier going down to Orlando. So he missed all last year, recovers from that foot injury. He had suffered, and I remember watching him at Summer League with Denver right before he got hurt, and he looked great. There was a lot of like full court runs where he was dynamic, and you get that flash of shooting from time to time with him, and then shot blocking, like by far the biggest thing with him. I actually screwed these numbers up here, so I'll take this down. But 2.8 blocks per game, you're getting some quick bursts of offense out of him, and the biggest memory I had of him in that Boston game is just coming in and blocking Brogdon like two or three straight times on jump shots. So he's dynamic right now. He's not playing a ton, but he's making the most of these minutes, and this is the kind of thing you want if you're Orlando, is just taking a flyer on a guy like this, a guy who's relatively young still and just has these insane physical tools, and he's coming in and making an impact off the bench.
Yeah, he's giving Orlando kind of what you ideally want. Well, he's playing 16 minutes a night, which doesn't sound like a lot, but for him it is. I wrote it yesterday, in my story yesterday. Like, this was the loss against the Knicks was the first time that Bol Bol had played at least 10 minutes in four consecutive games, which it's a weird, like, it's one of those, like, wait, what? You kind of had to, like, listen to it again. Like, when I saw it, when I noticed that myself, I was like, let me go back all the way through this because that doesn't make sense, but it's true. He hasn't gotten a whole lot of playing time. And not just that, but he hasn't gotten a whole lot of consistent playing time. So this is really our true first look of Bol Bol, the NBA player, in an actual role that's going to be, it looks like it could be consistent. You know, you mentioned the injuries, you know, Jonathan Isaac is out. Mo Wagner is out. You know, those are two bigs essentially who would be competing for rotation minutes. And who knows what's going to happen, you know, once those guys return. But at least as of right, in terms of the roles and what's going to happen, at least right now, Bol's making the most of the opportunity. You know, you talk, you know, the shot blocking has been insane. He's blocking shots inside the paint just as well as he's blocking shots or outside the three-point line. The time and anticipation and being light on his feet, that's, you don't really see that with a lot of guys, what, 6'11 up, and he's 7'2 with a 7'7 wingspan. Like, you, even when you feel like he's, and it seems like that's what happened with Brogdon, you think, oh, he's too far away, he's outside the play, I'm gonna get my shot off. He just puts his arms up like all the way to the ceiling, and next thing you know, you know, he's igniting a fast break because he's blocking you, and you're like, oh shoot, I just took a three and there's nobody else behind me. Like, I'm taking an above the break three and nobody's else behind me, and it's off to the races. And they're just game-changing, possession-changing plays that he makes.
And the more transition you can get out of plays like that is going to help them offensively. Like, they, again, this offense has just been, like, in the tank for years. So the more you can create in transition, the easier it's going to be for everybody. And the transition game's been great around the league so far. You're seeing teams put up, like, 120 per 100 in some cases through some of these early games. So that rule change is helping pretty much every offense out around the league for the most part. So they were getting that against Boston for sure. And Boston's going to have to figure out a way to shore that up. We'll get to them in a second. But in terms of Bol here, you look at these per 36, and these aren't always like the most accurate numbers, but they actually went up after last game. I've been keeping an eye on them with him because, like you said, he's not playing a ton. So what could you get out of playing him a little bit more? 22.5 points, 10.7 rebounds, and 6.2 blocks. That's per 36. So, like, there's a case here for Mosley to play this guy a little bit more now, especially with what you said, Mo Wagner and some of these other guys being out. See what you got early and often.
Yeah, I'm curious to see. You know, I'm curious to see, you know, with some of these guys out, you know, there is, the rotation's been hit pretty hard because they're missing, what, five guys who fight for rotation minutes. So I'm curious to see just, you know, after I think he played 20 against the Knicks on Monday, you know, does his miss go even more? You know, it's been kind of steady, just a rise. And I think some of that is, you know, this guy hasn't really played a whole lot of basketball in a while. We're kind of easing him into just be on the floor again. But he's trying to carve out a role, you know, you know, big plays, you know, that the blocks, that leads to transition. But he's also making the subtle plays, you know, being in the dunker spot, running the baseline well. But in transition, you mentioned that summer league with Denver, you know, just being able to bring the ball up the floor. His driving game, even in the half court, just kind of like, wait a second, like, you have great body control for your size, and nobody can really bother your shot if it's so high. So there are things we can do with you, but once he gets into his flow, it's just a really difficult task for most defenders because he's nimble, but he's tall. There's a lot going on with him.
Yeah, you don't even know what he, like, there was a drive on opening night against Detroit where he just went from, like, the left wing, spun around, and, like, finished reverse underneath. You don't even know what to call a play like that. Like, there are things he can do that not many guys around the league are capable of. It's not like Victor Wembanyama, but at that size, there's a little bit of that fluidity to him, which was always the most intriguing thing about him. Like, in college, he could just go wherever he wanted. So he was going to post up a lot, and he was going to do a lot of just post finishes over guys. And then he shot the three from time to time there at Oregon. But now, able to face up, able to do some things with the ball in his hands, like, you're seeing him make the steps. And you were looking for Banchero's age. I actually want to look up Bol Bol's at this point. He's 22, 23 in November. So a little older now. It's taken him a little while, but he's still young enough where he can project some serious upside there. 7'8 wingspan, 7'2. That surprised me down in Orlando, seeing him stand next to Luke Kornet and just seeing that comparison for how tall he is.
No, he's something else. And, you know, you just feel, you can see it. I mean, you can see it because I think the Knicks, you know, they gave the Magic the best fight of all the teams that they played so far, or probably, yeah, they played the best game against the Magic. And you can kind of see that, you know, Bol, he more than held his own. And he has this, you know, he's 7'2", but he almost plays like a wing, like a bigger wing. It's not this, like, oh, he's a big, man, to play him like a big. Like, he, at least in some lineups, he's played as the three in certain lineups because he does have that fluidity. He does have that ball handling skill, and he's just able to navigate in really tight spaces in ways that big men, quote unquote, don't. So I'm really interested to see how he takes, you know, where he goes from here, you know, after the first four games, after they're going to play Cleveland tonight for their fifth game.
So what else you got on the Magic, if you wanted to shout out something for people to look for with this team, other than what we've discussed so far here?
Yeah, no, I think there's a lot of just – we talked about with Paolo and his just his scoring ability. Like, this team's getting to the line more, a lot more than they did last year. And honestly, since Dwight's left, they haven't really been a free throw a team that's gone to the line. And a lot of that is because of Paolo. So that's the one thing to keep an eye on. I tweeted this out a couple days ago, but – with the amount of just free throw he's taking, like it's approached historic territory. He's getting to the line 9.3 times a game. I think David Robinson is the only player, as a rookie, that is, to get to the free throw line more as a rookie. I think it was like 10.2. Everybody else is below Paolo, at least at this moment. Obviously, we're four games in. There's a lot more of the season, but that's something to keep an eye on. It's a lot more. We didn't even mention Franz Wagner. He's being put in a lot more ball handling situations. And it's been up and down for him in that sense, you know, been more turnovers. You know, sometimes it can take him a minute to get himself and even the offense set up. But I think overall, this will be a good experience for him because he's going to learn more about running an offense than he's probably accustomed to. We asked him about this. I think that was last week or maybe before they played the Hawks, just how the, you know, how to go after playing Detroit in the season opener. And he said he could have handled it better, but just being that kind of ball handler isn't something that he's accustomed to on that consistent of a basis. We saw a little bit of it last year, but it's been taken to a different level this year.
Yeah, and that's good for his game because you do wonder if there's more of a roundedness and like a frontman role possible there because he did have moments last year, right? He scored 40 points in a game, if I remember correctly.
38 against Milwaukee. I think it was in December.
Yeah, so you do wonder with him whether like there's really that kind of potential in there. He had a couple 20-point games mixed in. It certainly did some things with the ball in his hands, but shooting was really that forte with him last year. And like to me, I look at him and I'd say he's like a connector, like more that glue guy, third man on our team. You know, I don't know who would ultimately be the number two in Orlando. Maybe it's whoever you get this year in the draft. But to me, it'd be like Paolo and one, Franz connecting, doing all those little things, secondary ball handling, and then number two guy, maybe Victor coming in there and giving them that like top tier scoring, more efficient. Because, you know, looking at these numbers now, if he is getting more ball time there, the assists are up, which is good. You know, turnovers bumped up by almost one per game. And then the shooting hasn't been great early on, like 23% from three, 41% from the field. So I don't want to put a cap on a guy's ceiling at, you know, what is he, 21? You want to see what he's capable of in that role. But to me, like, I feel like his best bet is sort of that connecting role.
Yeah, I was going to say, and this is something I'm keeping an eye on. Like, again, it's four games. A lot of the things I'm going to say is more so keeping an eye on rather than this is a definitive thing. But going on cleaning the glass, last year Franz was assisted on 59% of his makes.
Yep.
This year through four games heading to tonight's game, it's 28%.
Wow. That's
so dramatic. So yeah, that's a significant, we're talking about a 30% difference. And a lot of that is, you know, yes, you know, Jalen's been hurt. Markel's been, hasn't played. And they're also just they've changed up the offense a little bit. Like Cole Anthony's not, at least in the first game, he wasn't handling the ball as much. It's been a different, like the ecosystem has changed a little bit where, you know, Paolo and Franz are taking on more responsibility. But that's just something to keep an eye on. Just saying, like before, he was that off-ball cutter, spot-up guy who could do a little bit, like who was the ball handler in certain lineups. Now it's almost flipping where he's one of the main, like he is the main guy or even the second guy ball handling. So seeing before it was guys creating for him, now he's trying to create for others. And just seeing like how can you find that better medium between the two where he can benefit more off of the plays other guys make. Because the cutting and his cutting is still remains one of his best skills. And he is a good spot up shooter.
Cole, what were they? I'm trying to remember exactly. What were they down? Three, maybe four. I'm forgetting if it was one possession, two possession, where you try to throw down in traffic. That was one of the funnier moments from that game between Boston and Orlando when he tried to throw down a big dunk, I think, to either tie the game or pull within a possession.
I think it was either five or four, because I think if he dunked that, it would have been like a 3 or 2 point game. I want to say it was five. I could be wrong, though.
I don't think it was one possession, because that would have been even more dramatic if he did that in that circumstance.
Yeah, I think it was five or four. Because if it would have been two or three.
But yeah, that was five. It was five with 2 minutes to go.
Okay, that makes complete sense then. It's weird because outside of that, he didn't have the best game against the Knicks, but he was having a good game up until that point. At least if I'm remembering correctly.
Yeah, it went down to the wire. They fought well, you said, back to back. I guess the one thing I got left on the Magic is, when will we see Isaac?
TBD. It's something I'm going to ask about once they get back to Orlando later this week. I don't believe that – I know he didn't travel – him and the rest of the injured guys, I don't believe they traveled for last road trip, and I don't think they traveled for this road trip either. But last we saw him, at least last time I saw him, you know, he's been doing a bunch of like more quote unquote basketball things, like closing out drives. Like he's on the court doing a lot of individual work. Last I checked, he wasn't doing 5-on-5, but that was a while ago. The last time I checked. So once the team returns to Orlando, I imagine there'll be some sort of update on what he's doing. He's doing is going to impact. Is going to be more. The Magic aren't going to give like a timetable, but you can get a better understanding or clarity of what's going on once you understand, like, all right, what exactly is he doing in practices or on the floor?
Yeah. He hasn't played since August 2nd, 2020.
Hasn't played since the bubble.
It's a long time he's been out. It's kind of crazy. Multiple injuries too, right? That have kept him out.
Yeah, he had at first it was the ACL, that torn ACL that kept him out for, what would that have been, the 2020-2021 season. And then rehabbing, trying to get back last season, you know, they realized that they were just running out of time to bring him back. And then after that, he had the hamstring injury while rehabbing.
We'll see. A lot of guys have come in and moved in front of him in terms of the hierarchy here and who they're developing and who they're investing in. You wonder like what his career outlook looks like at this point, missing that much time. So I'm interested to see that. That's my last big question with the Magic here. I'll flip over to some of your impressions of the Celtics early on as we get to see them through four games right now. But first, we are brought to you here by Calm, the Calm app. Head over there and get 40% off when you download it. Show some love to the Garden Report by going to calm.com/garden. It's sleep sounds, it's meditation, it's yoga, it's a little bit of everything to help you calm your mind regardless of the time of day. Meditation in the morning, they get some routines to go through midday, maybe at your lunch or something, getting a break. And of course at night, those sleep sounds are a big help for me. So go over there, check that out. There's a lot more bedtime stories, yoga, I think they have as well. So go over there and get 40% off that whole library. And then, of course, Athletic Greens, had it this morning, enjoying some water now. But they are going to give you a year's supply of vitamin D, immune boosting, as it gets chilly up here. You don't know about that, Kobe. It's rainy.
I'm a Midwest dude. And I actually used to live up there, so I know about the cold, man. Don't try to do. I used to live.
You might have forgot there. Though. You might have forgot.
No, that's fair. That's fair.
We'll get into that in a second. But athleticgreens.com/garden, your supply of vitamin D, 5 free travel packs. It's vitamins, minerals, adaptogens, probiotics, and more. A little bit of everything for your health. It's give you an energy boost, and it tastes great. So go over there, check that out. You'll get cool gear like this as well when you sign up. That's athleticgreens.com/garden. So what was your journey to the Orlando beat, Kobe? Take me through the step-by-steps there.
Yeah, I guess I said it. I grew up in Chicago and the Chicagoland area. moved to South Florida in September 2019. At first, I was covering Florida Atlantic University football. I was the backup Miami Heat writer. I covered Inter-Miami CF of Major League Soccer, and then I covered the Miami Hurricanes football team. And it would have been December 1st, 2021, so 11 months ago is when I moved up to Orlando, rather, to cover the Magic.
All right, so this is your second full season on the beat?
This will be my first full season. I think I covered exactly 60 games last year. I came in on whatever game 22 or game 23 last year. So this will be the full, I'll be able to experience the full training camp, preseason, regular season, all that jazz.
Yeah, and that's great because, you know, I think people need to keep tabs on a team like Orlando and see what's going on there. Not on national TV a ton, not a lot of buzz, but a lot of important young players there, like we've kicked around. You can, of course, read Kobe at the Orlando Sentinel and follow him on Twitter at Kobe, K-H-O-B-I underscore Price. Let's talk Celtics, though, team that is on national TV a ton. They'll have Cleveland on Friday, Washington on Sunday. They're 3-1. What kind of bulletproof through those first three games? But you had some bad defensive numbers, including that blow up 120 that Orlando poured on them there. Terrence Ross was kind of cooking them around some screens and pull ups mid range. Heat tried to do the same thing the night before, but didn't have a ton of luck. Bam got into some foul trouble when they capsized in the second half. So you did see a couple like pokes in the armor there where teams could make them vulnerable. That drop defense to me hasn't been great. Like, you're not getting a ton out of Horford in that. You're missing Rob. But this team that was number one in defense by miles last year is down the 24th, giving up transition runs against the Bulls, just a debacle of a game there on Monday. So now you do start to put up the panic meter a little bit there. They're not rebounding great. They're not piling up stops. Even Marcus Smart's defensive analytics are looking pretty rough early on after his defensive player of the year season. But offensively, they're rolling. 126 here, the number three. They're hitting shots. They're looking dynamic on and off the ball. So you've gained in an area where you were weak last year, and it looks like they've dropped off in an area where they were strong a year ago.
Yeah, I've only really – so for the Celtics, I was able to watch the opening game that they played against the Sixers. And then obviously I was able to watch the game against the Magic in the entirety. And what really stood out to me more so in that in the game against Boston, I mean, in the game against the Orlando, was just how, you know, it seemed like they weren't defending at the level that I would expect them to. Now, granted, I had to remember that Al set that game. They're missing Rob. It is early in the season. But they're just – the level of, I guess, detail didn't seem there. And I understand that, yes, they're missing their starting bigs, essentially. So that's going to have an impact on, you know, the style of defense you play, but also just the impact those defenders have. But even with that, like, they still, like, look good to me. And that starts really with Jason Tatum. I'm watching the game. I tweeted out Tatum add a floater during the offseason? Like, what's going on? I don't remember him being able to score, you know, in that intermediate range, you know, before the season. And then I think Keith got back to me. He said, yeah, that's something he really worked on. I was like, all right, well, that really changes the game for him, because if he's able to have that floater, then that's just going to open up. Like, now you really have to just the gaps are just hard to close, because he's showing a willingness to take that shot. And that was one of, like, it's a small detail, but a big detail to me in terms of this him and what his game's going to be like. And obviously he's been shooting the ball ridiculously to start the season, but that floater is just going to open up so much for him.
Yeah. I've seen that ton of at the end of practice, particularly when we're in there, he'll be tossing those up. It hasn't looked great all the time, but he did get a few off, one in the Orlando game and one against Philadelphia, I think, as well, getting downhill. Everything's at the basket for him, which is great. He's not settling as much as he has in the past, particularly on those leaners. So you're seeing him score from more efficient spots. You're seeing him do little things like get off the ball, screen away from the ball. There was one play down the stretch in that Orlando game where he freed Derek White up, and again, a close game in the fourth quarter for a 3-point play going to his left, setting a screen for him, which he did last year, but came along late. That wasn't a thing for him earlier in his career. It was sort of making himself a target in the pick and roll or freeing guys up with screening actions on and off the ball, which I think only helps himself and others, as you saw there. And then finding him for that big slam, Derek White, that is, in the final minutes of that game. So big growth as a playmaker. He's not turning the ball over, which is awesome. Below two per game early on. Efficient. He's a 45% guy, shooting 55% and finally finding his three-point stroke in that last game early on. So he looks like a guy getting to the free throw line more. Defensively, you saw him take on that Paolo assignment a few times, force the ball off him out of bounds. Like, he just does everything to a level where you say, beyond the attention that's on him and how good this team could potentially be here, there's real MVP chance with him here. And he talked about it a little bit after that Orlando game. You're three games in, so it's way too early to start forecasting that. But in terms of like who the names could be that emerge here, he's right there with Ja Morant, I think, that could be next in line for potentially having their first MVP this season.
Yeah, I don't see why not. Like I said, obviously it's super early in the season. There's a lot of ball to be played, but the way he's, it's more so the approach. And yeah, some of the shooting efficiency will drop, but the approach, the mindset, and just the, I guess, understanding of what he needs to do. Like, he's picking his spots in a, just a more efficient manner. And like watching that game, while, like I said, watching the Philly game, but even watching like when they played Orlando, I was taken aback by him because he seems like he's taking that step from like star wing player to I can control the game and I can control the game how I want. So like in my image, like this game will be shaped in my image. And that's a huge step for any player, but especially for a wing, because those are the kind of players that you build championship teams around.
Yeah. And that defense too, like I'm writing about him after that game and I'm going through and hitting on all these different things. And it takes you a while to even get to his defense. Like it's amazing the player he's become on that end of the floor. This is all defensive capability with him. Again, like stopping Paolo at the spots that he did were important in that game. Having to take an assignment on a bigger, like more physical guy, even though he's younger, was impressive and showed his versatility there. And he had huge blocks, not only in that Philly game during one of their runs that shut them off, but in Miami, he had a chase down block as well while Miami had gone ahead. And there's just been these moments where he's been able to shut the game off with either a play, a basket, a stop defensively. So you talk about like that overall control of the game, that's going to be his advantage on some of these guards. You know, Giannis is always going to be able to do that too. So that might be a tough guy to get past in that MVP conversation. Jokic has such an overarching control of the game, but that's what it takes to put yourself in that conversation. Like, he is skyrocketed. I don't know where you put him in the league right now, but I think everybody generally has him top 10. To get into like that conversation of a guy that can like have his team in the championship conversation every year, those are the things you need to be able to do consistently. And it came and went last year. It was his first year of really trying to do all those things, but you saw the hints of it. And now, like night in and night out, you're starting to see all those different things: defense, passing, screening, rebounding. It's all there with him.
Yeah. While you were talking, I was actually trying to think of like just names who I would put in the top 10, and he's easily in there. But there is like the outskirts, maybe somewhere in that like 10 to 7 range, 10 to 8. But I mean, to get into that 5, well, that's, I guess, 2 to 6 range, like that's, it just takes that a little bit more consistency and just being able to see it more night in and night out. The playmaking has stepped up. So he's not going to be the playmaker that like a Luka is, or even a Jokic or a Giannis is, but he showed growth in that area a lot to me last year. So I'm really curious to see, you know, he's showing the shot making has been there. The shot creation has been there. Sometimes it's just about, like I said, picking your spots a little bit better and knowing like, I can just get this off anytime confidently. So I'm just, for me watching him, I'm curious about to see like, just, is this going to be a hot start, or, and he's going to get back to where he was kind of towards the end of last season, or is this just going to be who he is night in and night out? like, I'm controlling this game no matter who else is on the floor, night in, night out.
They need that consistency from him, especially while other guys are out. You're going to need those rest nights for Al. That was so important, stealing that game from Orlando on a rest night for him, back-to-back as well. They faltered against Chicago, which, you know, that's the third game in four nights. So maybe that's just kind of a one you just throw in the wash. But it was concerning that they got off to this great start, 8 minutes. They're flowing offensively, doing some of those things we've talked about here, and then it just kind of slipped away from them. They took their foot off the gas, Marcus Smart said after. I guess the most interesting guy, and like when we talk about that top 10 list, this season's going to be interesting for me from like a young guys versus old guys perspective, because that list, besides Jokic and Giannis, is dominated by a lot of that old guard, Kevin Durant, Steph Curry, LeBron, those type of guys in there. Even like a Paul George and a Kawhi are really in swing spots in that top 10 to 15 spot. And then you have your Ja, who I think by the end of this season is like firmly in that top like eight, top five maybe, the way he's been going. Tatum is definitely a guy you start to think about in there as well. Like, he's going to start to rise and move past some people. And, you know, in terms of people who fall, like, you know, what are you doing with LeBron at this point? Like, he's going to keep putting up those numbers, but is the impact still there? Is the winning certainly not going to be there as they start 0-4? So I wonder how much you drop a guy like that, even if he's still putting his numbers there. Like, I saw someone ask on Twitter coming into the season, would you rather have Tatum or LeBron right now? And you probably choose LeBron like each of the last 2-3 years. And then I think this might be the year where that flips. If you had to choose between one of them, like right now, you're starting a team with one of those two guys trying to go for a championship or championships one after another into the future, I'm probably taking Tatum.
I'm thinking about this entire time. I mean, I guess if I'm looking solely on this season.
You're still going LeBron?
I mean, part of me just want. I feel like I want to. I mean, that Lakers situation is so bad that I feel like it's messing up my perception of what LeBron is and isn't.
Maybe mine too. Yeah.
Yeah. It's not saying that he hasn't contributed to that situation, both on and off the floor. He plays a part in it, especially off the floor. You know, he's responsible in terms of like who the Lakers have and who they don't have and the moves they made to an extent, and even on the floor in terms of decision making. But I just think, like, is LeBron, like, what does LeBron look like if the actual on-court situation is different? Like, do we see him more engaged or just not, you know, taking logo threes like in the first quarter just because he can and nobody else on the team's going to shoot? Like, what if he was in a healthier ecosystem?
The FU threes, I love those.
Yeah, just the if he was in a healthier ecosystem, what would it be? So, like, player for player, when it really matters, I mean, part of me just wants to say I have a hard time not saying LeBron, but I mean, the fact that we're even, it's a legit question that's giving me brain farts. It's a testament to what Tatum's done, because
he really is hard to gauge in that situation. Like, 27, 11, and 7 is pretty monstrous for a 38-year-old. But 47th in the field is that's probably the lowest ever, at least lowest since 07 for him to start off here. And then 25% from three. They are a dreadful shooting team. And that's going to impact him as well. That roster is so poorly built. And they're one of those things, I guess, is a good time to get into stuff going on around the league right now. I can't take my eyes off of them, and hopefully that changes, because I don't want to watch them anymore. But it's just like such a disaster. Someone was saying on a podcast recently, like, them in Brooklyn, or it might have been on Inside the NBA, actually. They were saying, like, you can't take your eyes off of it because it's like a crash or something. Like, you're going by it and you just got to like look at it, even though it's pretty ugly. So them, Brooklyn, I think we all had an idea that it wasn't going to go well for those two, and it certainly hasn't so far. But in terms of things around the league that are looking up, I got to look at Portland. They've been exciting to watch to me so far. Things are looking nice there with Lillard back. There's a lot of guys around the league injury-wise who are back on the floor that I'm excited about, and they're probably at the top of that list. Like, you see how Anthony Simons and him are starting to mesh together, and You have some younger wings like Shaedon Sharpe coming in, and they've been one of my more exciting teams to watch. I'd probably throw the Jazz in there, surprisingly, as well. They're doing some good things early, despite just being this group that's thrown together right now. And a team that's really surprised me is Atlanta. I didn't have high hopes for them. That guard tandem looks dynamic. You got some finishers going off around them. They've always had a great offense, but the defense looking stable so far. So they might end up being better than I thought. And they might be a team that replaces like a Miami in my mind. Because Miami 1-3, something's up there. Something is up in Miami. And I saw it on Friday night. Like the vibes are just weird there. And that's a team you've covered as well. Normally it's like everyone's moving on a string. The defense is great. You got Spoelstra coaching up some of these unsung guys. But early on, like Butler's out of it. Lowry looks terrible. Bam's yelling at officials, following out of games, and you know, they're losing.
Yeah, it's been I was thinking about before we hopped on, I was thinking about like the preseason chatter was, oh man, like the East is going to be so tough. It's going to be so deep. Like it's going to be, you know, all these teams, like it's going to be a battle for the top 8 spots. And that still could very well be true. But it's funny that the teams that we thought in theory were going to be like toward the top, Philly, Miami, Brooklyn, I guess people, if you held out hope for Brooklyn, like those teams are all just having these really weird starts. Like Philly just won their first game the other night. Like Milwaukee and Boston have lived up to the billing. You didn't even mention Washington. I know we're just like, it's hard to mention every single team, but like Washington and Charlotte to me have been the teams that I've been like, wait a second. Cause I saw Atlanta play when that would have been the night before the Magic played Boston. And I was like, oh yeah, no, this team, they're clicking. I think they're going to be fine. And I thought they were going to be fine before the season, but they're just so like the East is going to be so tough. I didn't know where they would fall, but Charlotte and Washington getting off to as good well of a start as they have. Granted, Charlotte did play, I believe, the Spurs in their season opener, so you have to take that for what it is. But like that's look, Steve Clifford is going to find a way to make help a team win no matter what. And what we saw this Washington team get off to a good start last season. I think they were 8-3 to open.
Yeah, they were the best team in the league. They were like 10.
So just seeing what's sustainable, how they'll keep it up. I mean, that's why this early season's so tough because, like I said, with Washington, it was 8-3 last year. But, you know, Beal's look solid. But it's not just Beal, you know, doing everything. Like, Kuzma's look good. Porzingis has been fine. You know, it's a very, I guess, balanced team in that sense. Or it's at least so far in a way that, you know, previous years or previous iterations of this team, it hasn't really been so balanced. Like 2 years ago, it was Bradley Beal dropping 30 and they're losing by however much. So I'm just curious to see where they go from here.
It's all about Porzingis' health, right? And it always seems to be an injury lurking around the corner for him, unfortunately, at this point in his career. But when he's out there, even for Dallas, he was giving them 20 and rebounding, and the defense isn't what it used to be, but he's still a big presence out there if he's playing around the rim. When there was Spencer Dinwiddie goes out to Dallas in that deal and Davis Bertans. So it's kind of, you know, one team's problem for the other teams at that point. But there is a world where if Porzingis stays healthy, that might work out for them and they might be more competitive than people think. I like Danny Avdija now that he's back out there. He had an awesome summer in Eurobasket too, among a number of guys. So I'm interested to see them on Sunday. I had respect for them coming into this year. They're playing probably candidate in the East, but they are one of those teams that could make a little bit more noise than you think early on. And then you got your teams that are on the downturn, like Philly, Minnesota early, I think has been really disappointing. Who else is in that camp? Like you got your Sacramento, who I thought was going to be better than they've looked so far. Like who's that team you're looking at right now with like the eyebrow emoji sticking up in terms of like slow starts?
I think I named them. I said Philly. Yeah, I said Philly.
Philly. You're worried about Philly? I had them as the one seed. Like I flipped it at the last minute. I had Milwaukee. I was like, oh, they got some injuries. They're getting a little older. Middleton's out to start the year. Of course, they have the best defensive rating by miles and they're rolling out of the gate. And Philly, Harden's putting up these monster numbers, but if you actually watch the game, I don't like what he's doing. Like, he's not connecting with Embiid. He's not playing defense. He's, you know, dominating the ball, so you're not getting your Harris's and your Maxey's involved. And I'm worried about Doc. I love Doc. I don't want to see him fired, but it might happen.
Yeah, they seem disjointed right now. Nothing. I'm not seeing anything that would be like, oh, yeah, they're not contenders for whatever to win the East or at least to make the Eastern Conference Finals at that. But it looks disjointed. Like you said, it's a lot of Harden. And even he, like, he's putting up monster numbers, but it's watching him, he's not looking like the Harden that we're accustomed to. Like, and I think it's kind of comfortable or safe to just say that the Harden that we're going to have is not going to be Houston Harden in terms of just blowing by guys, getting to rim at will. Like, we're seeing a lot of him just being super physical and just kind of like bullying his way into shots. Instead of blowing by guys, he's just like putting his chest in, or not chest, his shoulder into guys. It's creating like that. That's why we've kind of seen an uptick in his mid-range shots, just because he's not, you know, able to fully get to the rim. But you said it well yourself, like, he's not connecting with guys as much. It's a lot of just him. I guess that's a similarity between what he did in Houston, just a lot of him creating, but you have other creators there, and there's not a synergy in terms of how they're playing offensively. Like, it seems to be your turn, my turn. All right, we're like running different offenses. And then defensively, I know that it just came out the other day that Joel Embiid was dealing with plantar fasciitis during the summer.
Impacting, he didn't look right in Boston to me in that game. A lot of jump shots, early slow start against Noah Vonleh, and Horford was in foul trouble early and he couldn't take advantage.
Yeah, he looks sluggish offensively. Then defensively, he didn't look as engaged. And I know he would go through these spurts of just like, all right, I'm cruising the first couple quarters or first few quarters, and the fourth quarter, I'm going to turn the defense up. But even that, we hadn't seen from him as much. So you wonder how much of it is just like, these guys got to get healthy. Like, at least with Embiid, he just has to ramp up his conditioning. But even when that comes, like, they got to get back. Their defense has just been, like, get back on defense. If you're not going to be rebounding the ball well offensively, like, you got to get back. And that just hasn't been the case either. So that's what I mean. It's more than just, like, the synergy. It also seems to be an effort ordeal too, especially with the transition defense.
Yeah, for sure. And they got to be better on that. And Matisse Thybulle doesn't play, which is weird anymore. And Embiid in the role is 119 per 100, which is good. You know, 75th percentile. That's a great number. But we saw them producing like 1-3 at their best last year after Harden arrived via trade. I'm looking at Harden's number right now in terms of the efficiency in the pick and roll, 0.97. It's not good enough. You know, they got to get going in that pick and roll. It was as good as any in the league last year. That's what gave me hope for them. I thought they could just run that all day long and get by and put up these monster numbers, but it hasn't been the case. The depth's not there, as this commenter says. I'm worried about them. I am. They're on my worry list. Sacramento's at the top because Sacramento. I thought this would be the year that changes, but not quite so far. I loved one of my favorite quotes this year. I saw Kings fans saying, Mike Brown had said, like, this team I saw on the court tonight, it is not a team I recognize from practice. And they're like, yeah, we know.
Well, I guess when I think about them, like, I did have hopes for them, but I guess I don't put them in that light just because –
they weren't a contender, but I thought they'd squeeze in the playoffs. And they still might. The West is pretty weak. They're still trying to integrate some guys, but not what you're looking for out of the gate.
And at least to their defense, like, they have, like, all teams they've played have been – well, the Portland, Clippers, and Golden State.
Yeah.
Like, and the Golden State game was deceiving because it was a 5-point loss, but – the starters really created that big separation early. And then they were kind of like, it seemed like, from what I can remember, I think it was like when the bench got in for Golden State, the younger guys got in for Golden State. That's when Sacramento started to make their push. But it's also just been like a tough start in terms of schedule. Like, you're talking about three teams who, I guess two teams who before the season, preseason, were contenders, and a Portland team who hasn't lost the game yet. And like you said earlier, was the one of the darlings, the early season darlings. So for Sacramento, I'm just kind of like, all right, let's get a few more games. Or if you don't pick up a win soon, like how much is the confidence going to get hit?
All right. He is Kobe Price with the Orlando Sentinel. Great to have you on Dome Theory for the first time. Number 96 here. Go check out his story in the Sentinel on Bol Bol, the former Celtic. Killing it down there in Orlando. Keep an eye on Paolo Banchero. Everything that team's doing down there. They're one of my teams to watch this year in terms of growth. The wins aren't there yet, which maybe they don't need to be in a year where you want to be low in that draft. But I see lots of individual things that I'm excited about with them. And they are playing the Cavs tonight. So good night to tune in. Cavs coming to Boston on Friday. So you can get a head start on looking at them and what they're going to bring to the Garden on Friday night. And that's all I got to say. Celtics practice today. We'll have some reports on them over on the Garden Report. I'm actually going to jump on those now. Grant Williams suspended today for that brush up with the official in Chicago. You have the Kanye Jalen saga continuing and ending, I guess. He cut ties with Kanye, and many people have at this point. So we'll dive into that as well. He didn't talk today, which is unfortunate, but he did put out a statement. So we'll talk about that. Always something in Boston, Kobe. We'll catch up with you later this season. I think they'll be here for a mini series in January, so we'll catch you then.
December 16th and 18th. I think they would Orlando travels to Boston. They play the Friday. I think it's like a Friday and Sunday.
Awesome, love those. We can do a podcast again then. Thanks, Kobe.
I appreciate you. Thanks for having me on.